This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
Bob Schuster sitting in for Dave Rothenberg, I guess.
This is
oh, my God. I don't know who the Rick DiPietro is on this show. I can't be both.
You know when you go to a diner and you can sit up by the flat top? What is that called? The counter? Yeah, the counter.
You're both of them rolled up in one. You're a gambling degenerate that loves to weave in innuendo throughout the show.
There you go.
I'm the talent.
This is DCR.
If Team A can't block Team B, Team A's dead.
On 98.7 ESPN.
That's why you listen to DCR for insight like that. Football experts that know how to break it all down. Yeah.
Love it.
DCR, 98.7 ESPN, presented by
Team B.
Progressive Insurance. DCR. Guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. One of those guests, he probably kept me around with the Jets as the radio announcer to tap into nuggets like that, right, Mike Tannenbaum? Like, having me around, just my orbit, I'm going to be able to drop one-liners. Like, if Team A can't block Team B, Team A is dead. It's things like that. I crawl inside the game, unlike most radio guys do, I would say.
You know, guys, we're going to have a lot of fun this morning talking about, like, how we have the right people and the right seats on the show. But the last time I did it, you know, Dave, it's so sensitive that you can't have any fun. So, you know, we can't have any Bob with shoes or replacing Dave Rothenberg jokes because, you know, he'll be mad for the next month at me, Chris, right?
Of course he would.
Yeah, that would be dicey. I agree with that. But thanks
now
for doing this, Mike.
This obese man that's going to sit in the chair.
That's not nice either. All right. So, Mike T., hey, I had you on a month ago on one of the other shows that I was hosting and asked you about what you thought of the Aaron Rodgers situation. Is it salvageable? How you would approach it? When you look now at the solution that they've come to, is this ultimately, like, would you consider this now salvaged? Or is this now just delaying the inevitable and Aaron Rodgers is out of there in a year?
Well, you know, I was saying for about 6 months that the ultimate compromise was that he would come back for a year and then move on. But, you know, this is really important, guys, and I know we'll be talking about this all day on ESPN, but if we go back to August 4th, 2019, Tom Brady modified his contract with the Patriots that made that the last year of his contract, and the Patriots couldn't franchise or transition him, meaning that it was very clear that he was leaving. And what's being reported, and of course we got to see the details, guys, but it sounds like he still has a contract for 2022, and I have a lot more questions just in terms of, well, what happens if Green Bay changes their mind? And here we go again next year. So I think we have a lot more questions than answers as of Tuesday morning, because if it just is quote-unquote to revisit a situation as a GM, I don't really know what that means.
Mike, if as a practical matter, they can't franchise him or transition tag him after that 2022 season, if Aaron Rodgers still wants to leave after this coming season, aren't you kind of boxed into moving him as a general manager? Because you can't just let him walk out of the door for a compensatory draft pick, right? So, I mean, don't you kind of get forced into a situation where you have to move him just because of how big of an asset Aaron Rodgers potentially would be on the open market?
So, Chris, if we were running a franchise, that would certainly be something we would consider. But what I would say to you is this. Are we better off trying to win a championship in 2022 with Aaron Rodgers? And we're going to be rebuilding anyway. So, you know, this is a team that's been to back-to-back Final Four games. That's really hard to do. So even if we had him for one more year next year, hey, why not run it back, give ourselves a chance to win? By then, we'll know a lot more about Jordan Love. We still have our own first-round pick. So while I would strongly consider him trading him for multiple first-round picks, I think that's a little bit of a harder decision just because anytime Aaron Rodgers is on your team, you have a chance to win a championship. And when it's all said and done, that's what it's about. So I understand your point, but even if I have him for 1 year, I just don't know if I'm going to trade Aaron Rodgers.
Fair enough. Mike, I want to ask you, how is the Aaron Rodgers news and what's going to happen with his contract moving forward affecting the Davante Adams negotiations?
Yeah, I think that's a real positive for Green Bay because I would get Davante Adams, his agent, in a room and say, hey, we're getting this thing done. Aaron Rodgers is here at least for this year, hopefully longer. we got to substantially adjust your contract and figure out a solution. I think what's hard in those situations, guys, is this. You could clearly say he's worth, you know, pick a number, 20, 21, 22 million. When you have DeAndre Hopkins out there at 27 million, it's really hard because you have one contract that's just so out of whack with the rest of the market. And if I'm Devontae Adams, I'm not taking a penny less than him. And if I'm the Packers, I'm saying, well, there's five other contracts we could point to say that, hey, here's the fair amount. So I think that's the challenge there. But you got to get that deal done. I mean, that's really what the system's about. He's a great player. He's high character. You drafted him. Those players should never leave. And whatever you're going to pay him, it's going to be more in free agency because someone would overpay him. So if I'm Green Bay, I don't let him leave the room and I get it done.
Mike Tannenbaum, resident general manager with us here on DCR 98.7 ESPN. All right, Mike T., you are the general manager of the Eagles, to pick kind of an obvious name out of the hat, but you're a general manager of any NFL team right now. How much are you willing to kind of dip your toe in the water right now with calling up the Houston Texans and seeing what it would take to get Deshaun Watson? Or are you saying, you know, until we have a much clearer picture of what his future is, I'm hands off? How would you approach it?
Yeah, this one's obviously a lot more complicated, guys. And again, we're dealing with a very serious situation and allegations with, you know, multiple, you know, potential victims here. So until the criminal situation is resolved, it's really hard to move forward. But what I would be doing is calling Houston literally on a daily basis. I would be keeping, in this case, Jeffrey Lurie abreast of what's going on because I do want to get ahead of our competitors. And I do think from a trade standpoint, there's a trade to be made in terms of saying, hey, we'll give you three first-round picks if he plays, call it 75% or more of the snaps this year. Again, that's assuming that the criminal situation is resolved. And I think one other dynamic here that's really important is if we go back to 2010, guys, Ben Roethlisberger was suspended six games. There was no criminal charges filed against him, but Roger Goodell suspended Ben Roethlisberger for six games for violation of the personal conduct policy. And again, it's just a reminder that the standard for personal conduct is lower than a criminal standard. So even if, and it's an if, the criminal situation does get resolved at some point, there's still going to be an eligibility question about Deshaun Watson this year.
Mike, bringing it a little bit closer to home, both the Jets and the Giants report to training camp today, and one of the biggest storylines all preseason around Big Blue is going to be when are we going to see Saquon Barkley, if at all, during the preseason. If you're the general manager, if you're Dave Gettleman, how do you handle this situation, and what's your expectation for Saquon in 2021?
You know, if he's clear medically, Chris, at some point, you know, he has to play. You know, it's interesting, and you know this as a former player. When you talk to players coming off of big injuries, oftentimes the last and most important hurdle is the psychological, which is they have to get hit,
yep.
They have to go to the ground, and they have to be able to get up. And in a perfect world, Chris, that happens in a scrimmage. That happens quickly in a preseason game. But until that happens, a lot of players that I've talked to, even though they're cleared medically, there's still that little question mark left. So it's a tough situation because obviously you don't great player play much in the preseason, but he at some point he needs to take a hit on that knee and then they can move on.
You know, looking at the upcoming season, Mike, I'm going to ask you a question that Chris and I were going to get into, we haven't gotten into yet. But I think it's a really interesting question. It'll kind of set the table for us to give our opinions. But you've actually sat in this chair. So I'm really interested to know, if you look at the Giants and the Jets right now, you look at what they've got on their rosters, but what's to come? Draft capital, salary cap space. If you could pick between these two general manager jobs, looking at the next year, two, three, 4 years down the road, which guy do you think is set up more for success, Dave Gettleman or Joe Douglas?
Well, Dave Gettleman, because I just know how costly the play-by-play broadcasters of the Jets are.
And
how unreasonable they can.
Yeah, it is. That is a big chunk of the budget. That is true.
Yeah, if it was up to me, I'd just say the X factor would be Zach Wilson. I really like Zach Wilson, and I think we'll know a lot more about Daniel Jones. I think the Giants had a really good offseason, and if I'm Daniel Jones, I am doing backflips from, you know, Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney, all the offensive line improvements. So if I'm them, I'll know a lot more about Daniel Jones. But if I was saying, boy, for the next 10 years, could I have Zach Wilson or Daniel Jones? As of now, I'm going to go with Zach Wilson. Here's the only caveat is, and I think New York fans will be surprised, like I was the first time I saw Zach Wilson in person. He's small. And Bob, you're co-hosting a show with a really big man, and Chris Ganey, who is a great player and a great athlete, and he's a big man that can move. And when you look at Zach Wilson, the question we all have to start reorienting ourselves is, can this player withstand the rigors of a 17-game season? And that would be my only concern if I was a Jet fan about Zach Wilson.
Mike, you sound a little upbeat. I know it's the start of football season with everybody reporting to training camp, but what's going on? Why do you have so much energy this morning?
You know, Chris, I'm glad you asked. I take X2, which is an all-natural, healthy pre-workout energy drink that you can go to x2performance.com, and it's used by none other than players like Saquon Barkley and Kawhi Leonard, and appreciate you asking.
Boy, that was radio professionalism right there. I mean, that's like, that was unbelievable. Like, that was really, I actually took notes. I'm going to replay that. Like, you go back and watch game film and get better as a player. I'm going to go back and listen to the tape and see how you guys pulled that off.
There you go. There you go.
That was
Hang
beautiful.
Around.
Mike, thanks a million.
All right, great to be with you guys. Chris, hope you had a good summer.
Absolutely. It's time to get back to it, though. So excited for football season. Finally, it's here.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Canty, I put this question to Mike Tannenbaum. You actually brought it up before the show, but I'll put it right back on you. Dave Gettleman, Joe Douglas, the two New York football general managers, which one would you rather be right now?
Yeah, Bob, I was at about 35,000 feet when I actually thought about this. That was my brainchild on the way coming back from Vegas last night. But when I initially thought about it, I said, man, I feel like I'd rather be Dave Gettleman. I would. And I understand that Dave Gettleman is clearly on the hot seat. I mean, if Daniel Jones turns out not to be your quarterback, then they're probably not going to just be looking for a new quarterback, but they'll be looking for a new general manager. Dave Gettleman won't have a job. Like, so I understand, like, there's a lot of, you know, question marks about Dave Gettleman's job security, and rightfully so, based on the job that he's done with his team, because you're talking about him being the general manager for this team for 4 years, and you're talking about double-digit loss seasons in each of those years. So, I mean, there's a lot to prove if you're Dave Gettleman, but when I look at the composition of this roster, when I look at the talent on both sides of the ball, especially what he did this offseason with the skill position players, and then him being able to trade back for the first time in his history as a general manager in the first round and acquire that extra first-round draft pick and an extra fourth-round draft pick in 2022, I just feel like if you're the Giants, you're probably set up for success both in the short term and the long term, more so than where Gangrene is at right now.
How much does salary cap space play a part in the argument, if at all?
See, the tricky thing about salary cap space is that we have to see what happens in terms of the television contracts that get signed and moving forward and how that's going to impact the cap. And then you also know that there was an adjustment because of COVID, and so some of that will be, you know, kind of lingering for the 2022 season. But, I mean, the cap is expected to explode after 2022. So, I mean, I feel like any kind of salary cap constraints that the Giants might have, I just feel like they can be pushed into future years by being able to rework contracts, especially knowing that you're not paying your quarterback top of the market money right now. So I just feel like the Giants have a whole lot of flexibility in terms of where they're at with their roster, but they also have a lot of good pieces that are in place. I mean, you look at the defensive side of the ball for the Giants. I mean, you've got to like where they're at. They're going to have one of the better secondaries in the NFL. You like what their front seven brings to the table in the way of being able to stop the run. Leonard Williams played at an all-pro level last year. You drafted Azeez Ojulari, who should factor into the pass rush in a big way in 2021. Like, there is a lot to like when it comes to this Giants team. And so I feel like for a team that was in it right up until the end in week 17 last year in terms of being able to earn a playoff spot, coming into this year with all of the things that Dave Gettleman has done this offseason, all of the talent that he's infused on the offensive side of the ball, like the Giants are ready to roll. Like I have some high expectations for this team. This Giants team should be a playoff team in 2021.
All right, so I'll play devil's advocate. Of course, the Jet guy. So, right, you got to pick the Joe Douglas side of the argument. I would rather be Joe Douglas. And I would say I agree with Mike Tannenbaum. The jumping off point for the argument is going to be which quarterback do you think you have a more belief in 5 years from now is either going to be the starter or going to be a franchise-level player? Do you like Zach Wilson? Do you like Daniel Jones? Obviously, the Jets love Zach Wilson, and they really did have him targeted. The minute they won a game, they knew that that was where they were going to go draft-wise. And there are plenty of folks out there that think that Zach Wilson is, you know, kind of cut from that same mold of the Patrick Mahomes, the Kyler Murrays, like do all that stuff. Throw off platform, be inventive, sidearm it, get out of the pocket, create all of that. His size, whether or not he can sustain the hits he's going to have to and survive a 17-game season, as Mike T said, is certainly a concern. But the Jets are massively better set up next year, at least in the short term, salary cap-wise. The Giants, with the Nate Solder's contract, with Blake Martinez's contract, Sterling Shepard, they have plenty of ways, if they wanted to restructure those deals or just release those guys, to create a lot of salary cap space. Yep. But they can't get anywhere near where the – I mean, the Jets right now, I think, are third in the league next year in salary cap space. On top of that, this is where the argument gets a little more muddy, because I think it would be clear-cut Joe Douglas before the Giants made the trade with the Bears. I think that trade – I loved that trade.
Oh, yeah.
I think getting Kadarius Toney, adding a first-round pick next season as well – and I had Bears fans killing me on Twitter, but – I said this on draft night. I think that could be a top 10, potentially a top 5 pick. I am not high on the Bears.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't think the Bears are going to be a very good team this year. I mean, I don't have belief that Andy Dalton is, as a starting quarterback, going to get you to even 500. So I think the jumping off point is, if Andy Dalton, your starting quarterback all season, even in a 17-game season, I'm not picking the Bears to win more than 6 or 7 games. So right there, it puts you on the cusp of being a top 10 pick. If they throw Justin Fields out there, which, you know what? I think they will. That's what you do. You take rookie quarterbacks, no matter how bad your team is, and you're like, you know what? We drafted you to be our future. Go play. Go make your mistakes. Go learn on the job. We're building for the future. I think they will do that with him. So I think that draft, that could be a top 5 pick, potentially, if the Bears have a lousy season, which I think they could. But the Jets have 2 firsts and 2 seconds next year, still living off of the Jamal Adams trade.
Mm-hmm.
They have a ton of draft picks, and they have done a really good job of addressing their offensive line. So I think the Jets are address cornerback and maybe another really like explosive skill position guy away from being able to be set up well for the future. And they've got all the cap room in the world to pay everybody on their team they want to pay and maybe go out and hit free agency as well. But I actually think that you can make an argument that both of these general managers, I think, are approaching this the right way. I think they're both in it for the long game. I think they have to be. I know that you don't like to constantly hear the word rebuild. It doesn't change where the two rosters are. I think it's a close call, but if I had to pick one or the other, based on the fact that the salary cap space right now is really friendly for Joe Douglas, I would lean in his direction.
Well, here's the thing. I think if you're talking about salary cap space both now and in future years, that clearly belongs to the Jets. If you're talking about overall talent on the rosters right now, that clearly belongs to the Giants. I think draft capital is a push. I mean, you ran down what the Jets have in 2022. I mean, the Giants have 2 firsts, a second-round pick, 2
yep.
third-round picks, and 2 fourth-round picks. So they have a hell of a lot of draft capital, too,
yep.
in the early rounds. So I think that's a wash as well. What this is going to come down to is, how do you feel about your head coach? How do you feel about your quarterback? And right now, I mean, we haven't seen anything from Rob Saleh, but you have to love what you saw from Joe Judge in year one for the Giants. And we don't know what Zach Wilson is going to be. But, I mean, I would probably lean that direction in terms of the quarterbacks just because Daniel Jones the first couple of years hasn't left the kind of first impression you're looking for. I mean, 39 turnovers in 2 years of football ain't exactly what you want from a guy that you put the 6th overall pick in. So, I mean, it's just – this is really close, but if I had to bet it, I would lean toward the Giants just because I've seen them be one game away from being able to make the playoffs. I can't say that about the Jets at any point this coming season or in the foreseeable future. I just don't see that happening based on the division that they're in.
But again, if you're going to draw a straight line from coach and general manager to quarterback, if I had to ask you, say, 3-4 years from now, without even having Zach Wilson throw a football yet in the NFL, but that's your job. Well, like if you're a general manager, you have to scout, you have to watch the tape, you have to prognosticate, you have to make a decision based on not having seen these guys before they get to the NFL. You have at least a sample size of Daniel Jones. Right now, if you could draft either Daniel Jones or Zach Wilson to be your quarterback, who would you draft?
Oh, boy, you're putting me in an uncomfortable spot because Daniel Jones is a guy that I root for. He's the quarterback of Big Blue, and he went to my high school. So I don't want to say that I would go against him. But, I mean,
you know, nothing personal. It's only business.
In this situation, I think I would go with the unproven commodity in Zach Wilson just because I haven't seen any negatives from him. I haven't seen anything from him, but there's nothing negative that I would point to. With Daniel Jones, we've been talking about the turnover since he got here.
Yep.
And that hasn't changed yet. So until that moves in a significant way, then I'd have to go with Zach Wilson. I mean, it's hard to win football games when your quarterback is turning it over once a game. Like, that's a problem. So I don't know, man. I would go with Zach Wilson, but at the same time, I feel better about what Daniel Jones has around him in the short term versus what Zach Wilson has around him.
Really interesting, though, that you would take the general manager more with the quarterback you like less.
Yeah, but
right? Like, that's not usually the way it goes.
No, it's not the way it goes, but here's the thing. The Giants have so many pathways to being able to get the quarterback if Daniel Jones turns out not to be your guy. Because you mentioned it. You got the 2 first-round draft picks this coming season because you were able to trade back with the Chicago Bears, and knowing that you have disgruntled quarterbacks that are out there. You see, Aaron Rodgers might be out there next offseason. Deshaun Watson might be out there next offseason. You know, Russell Wilson might be out there next offseason. So, I mean, you have multiple first-round draft picks that you can use as ammunition to being able to go get a veteran quarterback that you feel like could be your guy for the foreseeable future, or if you have to move up in the draft and be able to get one of these kids coming out of college and take another swing at drafting and developing a quarterback, you have an opportunity to do that based on all the draft picks that you do have. So that's why I lean toward being in Dave Gettleman's seat.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Jerry in Brooklyn has been waiting for a while, and he joins us now here on 98.7 ESPN on DCR. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, good morning, Bob, with that booming voice. I love what you do with the Jets.
Thanks. I appreciate
Chris,
it.
Chris, good morning. You know, I called about Deshaun Watson, but I'm going to just skip that because I think it's a fascinating argument that you presented about Gettleman and J.D. and the quarterbacks. What if both quarterbacks are the real deal? Which organization do you think would reach the Super Bowl first, Jets or the Giants? Thanks, guys.
I'm going to let Bob say it because I know it's going to pain him to say it, so I'm going to let him go ahead and say it.
I mean, right now, the team that's got more depth of talent is the Giants. So if both of these quarterbacks hit, then I would pick the Giants to get to the Super Bowl before the Jets. But I think if both of these quarterbacks hit and hit big, then I think the way that Joe Douglas is building a team, like the way that I think the DNA that he is putting into this team, caring about the offensive line, caring about the defensive line, making sure that the line of scrimmage and protecting that quarterback is priority number one, I do think that this is the most hope that a Jet fan could have, I think, of if they hit on the quarterback, actually getting finally to the promised land and, you know, for the first time in nearly 60 years, making it to a Super Bowl. Although, if I had to bet on which team would get there first, if both quarterbacks turn out to be really, really, really good, I would pick the Giants.
Yeah, I think that's the obvious answer. But to your point, I mean, if Zach Wilson is the real deal, then you'd feel good about where the Jets are at. But the one little carve-out that I would say, the one caveat would be, you also need to see whether or not you got a head coach. I feel like the Giants checked that box last year with the things that Joe Judge had to deal with, whether it was the Mark Colombo deal or dealing with Golden Tate, player discipline. Just like you saw that Joe Judge established a level of institutional control that wasn't there under Ben McAdoo. It wasn't there under Pat Shurmur. And it really wasn't there at the end of Tom Coughlin's tenure. Like, you had that for the first time in half a decade with the Giants under Joe Judge. So, I mean, I'm interested to see whether or not Rob Saleh is going to be able to establish that early on in his tenure as the Jets coach, because if he is, and if Zach Wilson develops into what the Jets believe he could be when they took him with the second overall pick, then I would agree with you that long term, I think it's more sustainable how JD is trying to build this team versus what Dave Gettleman has done as the general manager of the Giants.
Well, I can tell you, going after a head coach like bullet point number one in the job description for Rob Saleh is exactly what you just described. Like, they wanted a CEO, a head coach of the whole football team, a guy like old Bill Parcells wearing a headset with a splitter. He's not calling the defenses. He's not calling offensive plays. He will be the coach of the entire team, and he will have a defensive play caller and an offensive play caller, and he will just make big picture decisions. But not, hey, when the defense is out there, hey, guys, go get them. Do the best you can. I'm going to be over here with the offense. Let me know how you make out. I think they really wanted that you know, kind of whole of a head coach rather than part of a head coach, or having like dual head coaches where your defensive coordinator is like a co-head coach.
That doesn't really work.
No, I think they wanted like what Joe Judge is, right? I mean, Joe Judge is very, very, very clearly the head coach of the Giants. And I think they wanted a guy that there's no questions asked. This is the top of the pyramid. And I think they like that about Rob Saleh. So we'll see if it works out. Spike down at St. Pete joins us next. DCR regular here on 98.7 ESPN. What's up, Spike?
Hey, good morning, my guys. You guys sound terrific this morning. Just telling RJ when I call, I walk, I watch the sun come up. It's kind of a cool experience listening to you guys talk. All sorts of sports. Nice. Comment from yesterday, Bob. You made a statement. I forgot the guy. Don't mean to jog your brain. But you said, who got the guy leading those National League in hits? What team?
Oh, the Padres.
Oh, the Padre. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I was talking about the Mets yesterday.
Yeah.
And caught the end of the second game, and I just don't see it. You don't agree with me that the Mets are just...
It's an arms race right now in the NL West. I mean, you got the third place team going out and getting arguably the best guy available, at least short term, on the trade market. I just think, Chris, we talked about this earlier, I think the Mets owe it to their fan base. And how many seasons can Jacob deGrom be this, and you see one after another go by the boards, and you miss another opportunity to take advantage of having not just the best pitcher, but I think arguably
the best athlete.
He might be the best athlete in the world at what he does. I think you make an argument that the guy in second place to Jacob deGrom doing what he does, there is a wider gap between deGrom and the second best pitcher than there is between the best athlete in the world at anything and the second best guy. And I think that's how good he has been to let another season go by where, all right, well, we wanted to hold on to our assets. We didn't want to go out and add too much payroll. We didn't want to risk it, roll the dice. Yes, like, when is it finally time to roll the dice and risk and go out and make a move to try and take advantage of a season the Mets might be able to have right now?
Well, this is the time to do it, right?
Yes.
We're almost two-thirds of the way through the season, and the Mets are sitting in first place in the NL East. Like, you should go out there and do it, because it would be franchise malpractice not to try to find a way to get Jacob deGrom into the postseason pitching the way that he's pitching this year. Like, you have to be able to do that. And you'll have the opportunities, because some of the things that you need on this team are going to be available in the trade market. So you've got an owner who's on the record and saying that he's willing to blow past the luxury tax. He doesn't want to just go past it by a little bit. He's going to blow past it if this team decides they're going to make a move and take on salary, just because he wants it to be worth it to him in terms of the result that you're going to get. And so I think there's a reason to be really optimistic if you're a Mets fan on what the Mets are going to do this week. I anticipate them making multiple moves, and one of them is probably going to be a really big move. So it's an exciting time around Flushing right now.
Yep. You know, the one thing we were always told about Steve Cohen before he bought the team was money was no object. Right? Like, that's supposed to be the first headline.
Put your money where your mouth is now. Money where your mouth is right now.
I think he will do that. By the way, some bad news, and we're waiting to see exactly how serious it is, but Simone Biles, who's probably the poster girl or poster woman of all of our Olympic hopes, it was just announced that she has now pulled out of the team competition in gymnastics at the Olympics. Apparently an injury. Not sure how severe it is. Will she be able to, when we get later into the Olympics, still compete in the individual events? But, boy, I want to talk about just a brutal blow to, I think, what maybe more so than any of us looking forward to watching as the Olympics went on, Simone Biles compete. It would be really, really terrible if she suffered some kind of an injury and she's not able to compete at all the rest of the Olympics. But at least right now, she is not going to compete in the team competition the rest of the way. She's pulled out.
Yeah, Bob. Well, I mean, you just talked about how great Jacob deGrom was and how much better he is at his job than anybody else in the world is at their job. I mean, Simone Biles is right up there at the top of the list when you just talk about greatness. And the Olympics is the stage for gymnasts to demonstrate that greatness. So if she weren't able to compete in the individual portion of it, that would be something that would be missed. That would be an absence that would be felt throughout the Tokyo Games, no doubt.
DCR presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. Visit progressive.com. Let's get to Nick in Suffolk. Joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN DCR. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, so I was calling in about you guys. Who was better about whether it's Joe Douglas or David Gettleman?
No, who would you rather be?
Joe Douglas. Who would I rather be? I'd rather be Joe Douglas, just in the sense because he's got a little bit more to play with. He's got a couple more extra picks. He's got the cap space for the Jets are looking real good. And don't get me wrong, Gettleman made some nice moves during the draft. He drafted, he got traded for a first-round pick, which is awesome. I think that was a smart way to move because they missed out on their man, Devontae Smith. But he also had some questionable moves in the past. But they are set up nicely with some good players. Joe Judge is a terrific coach, and this is coming from a Jets fan. But just because Joe Douglas has a little bit more to play with, I'd rather be Joe Douglas all the way.
I think you make that argument. I mean, I don't think, right, Chris? I don't think it's unfair to say you'd rather be Joe Douglas. I said I would rather be Joe Douglas. But I think that you ran through it before. The draft pick capital that both of these teams have is a little bit closer, maybe, than Jet fans might realize after the Giants made that Kadarius Toney trade to trade down and pick up an extra pick in the first and fourth rounds with Chicago.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the Giants picked up that first and that fourth, which makes a difference. Now you're talking about them having multiple picks in three of the first four rounds in 2020. So, I mean, they're right there with the Jets in terms of draft capital to continue to try to build out their rosters. The one thing I will say that probably is a feather in JD's cap is not just the way that he's building this roster, but just in terms of where he's at with the timeline with the organization and their program building. Like, I mean, this is his third season on the job with Dave Gettleman. It's his fourth. And it's Daniel Jones's third year with Zach Wilson. It's his rookie year. So there's going to be more leash if you're a JD, if your team struggles and you're not getting the tangible results in the way of wins and losses versus with Dave Gettleman, there really is no excuse. Like, the offensive line is no longer an excuse. A lot of the guys that are going to be lining up are guys that you decided to bring into the organization. Like, there is no excuse for the Giants not to have success, which is why I'm expecting this team to compete for a playoff spot. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, they better be right up there at the end of it in week 18. Like, that's what kind of year it has to be for the Giants. Like, they need to be making a playoff push in 2021. And if they don't get in, they should have just missed the playoffs. Anything less than that, then you're talking about Dave Gettleman probably not being the general manager moving forward.
Let's get to Anthony in Belmore. Joins us next here on DCR 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Anthony.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Huge Jet fan for a long time, and I just cannot get excited about this team. They just break my heart every year. These guys,
they got a new quarterback and a new head coach. Come on, Ant. Work with them.
Listen to me real quick, okay? Listen to me real quick. Let me just get my phone and let you talk, okay? Bottom line is, when Brett Favre was a Jet, they were 8-3. All my friends would call me up. It's your year. It's your year. I said, listen, they're the Jets. They're going to screw it up. They screwed it up. When they had Sanchez, they went to the AFC Championship back-to-back years. I told my friends, don't worry. They're the Jets. They're going to screw it up. They sure the hell did. Now, last year, when they had Sam Darnold, before the season started, I said to my friend, watch, this season, someone's going to get hurt before the season with a stupid injury. Sure enough, Sam Darnold had mono. They are the biggest mush franchise. And I'm a Jet fan. And then when you watch the Jets play the Dolphins at, they even say it, welcome to Giant Stadium, even the announcers are making fun of the Jets. The biggest mush franchise. I'll root for them, but we're not winning anything. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Well, Anthony, I'm sure they appreciate your support, your full-throated, enthusiastic support. You'll root for them, but they stink. All right. I'm almost 50 years old, so I've been watching football since I was 10. So I go back a long way. When I was growing up, the franchises, or at least some of the franchises, that in a million years you couldn't picture winning anything ever, the Giants, late 70s, early 80s, were one of the biggest mush franchises out there.
Oh, yeah, 64 to 80, it was awful.
People
that was the paper bags, right?
People used to go to Saints games with bags over their heads, right? Like they were the Aints. The Patriots, for a long stretch of time, before Bill Parcells got there in 1993, the Patriots were one of the joke franchises in all of professional sports. The Jets in the 80s were good, right? The Giants in the mid-80s got really, really good, obviously. So, like, if you think about some of the franchises that right now just trip off the top of your head are gold standard franchises in the NFL, they were franchises that years and years and years ago, in a million years, you could not picture ever winning anything until they got the right people in the right decision-making positions, made the right decisions, got the right quarterback. Someday the Jets are going to hit on the right coach, the right quarterback. I'm optimistic that they've done it now. We'll see. I mean, you have no idea until they actually go out and do it, Chris. But the idea that, you know, just ad infinitum. I mean, the Jets were in back-to-back championship games a decade ago. It's not even like it was that long ago that you thought they were hitting on something. You know, the idea that you're just cursed forever to root for a franchise that can't ever. I'm telling you, there are fan bases out there that felt exactly the way you feel at one point in history and were proven wrong.
Well, here's the thing. The Jets are in the midst of the longest playoff drought in the NFL. So they haven't really given you a whole lot to hold on to in recent memory to make you feel like they have a chance to be able to get on the right track. But what I don't understand about, like, callers or fans like Anthony, like if you're a Jets fan, how could you not be optimistic about where they're at right now? I mean, this is year three of Joe Douglas. And as you mentioned it's really his second offseason in terms of talent acquisition. You got a brand new head coach in Rob Saleh, who a lot of other teams around the NFL that were looking at head coaches wanted to hire. And you got the second overall pick, a quarterback, Zach Wilson. I don't understand. If you can't be optimistic about what they're doing right now, GM, head coach, quarterback, I don't understand what you're doing.
Why do you want to be a fan of the team if you
can't be optimistic about where they're at right now and what they've done?
Right.
For the first time, you actually had the general manager go out and pick the head coach. You had the general manager go out and pick the quarterback. And all three of those pieces of your franchise are seemingly in lockstep. If you can't be optimistic about that, then what the hell are you doing? Why do you want to be a fan of the team?
And the last time they went out and spent draft capital like this on the offensive line, that became the foundation for an offense, even with Mark Sanchez at quarterback, that went to back-to-back championship games, that became a team that was routinely in the playoffs or kind of an every other year in the playoffs kind of a team. So you're right. I mean, look, we said this earlier, and I've said this a million times. Joe Douglas got a 6-year contract for a reason.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was very honest with ownership and management when he went in and sat down for his interview. This is where your roster is at. If you're going to hire me, you got to legitimately give me the time I'm going to need to come in and flip this roster. I think the early returns on draft class number one were good.
Yeah.
You talked about it before. Mekhi Becton looks like exactly what you would want a left tackle that you take at the top of the first round to look like. Now he's got his quarterback to build around. Now he's got a left guard to put next to Becton. I think the Morgan Moses move was tremendous. Kind of fell in their lap, but they got it done. Now they've got a legit right tackle as well. Those are the foundational pieces that should give you some belief that it's heading in the right direction.
No, it should, but most importantly is that your organization seems like it's functional for the first time in a long time. Like, I don't have to worry about the backbiting between the coaching staff, Adam Gase and Greg Williams and all this other stuff. I don't have that kind of drama around my team. Like, it's not Game of Thrones between the head coach and the GM and this fight for power. Like, you don't have to worry about that Gase-McCagnan struggle anymore. Like, those are the things that make me feel good about the trajectory for the Jets. Like, you're putting the infrastructure in place so that you can develop the talent that you acquire and go about forming an identity for your team moving forward. Like, that to me is what matters when it comes to having sustained success in the NFL. It seems like the Jets are on their way to doing that. And I guess it really shouldn't be a surprise to you or I or anybody else that's in football circles, because you know where Joe Douglas comes from. He comes from the Philadelphia Eagles organization. He spent time with the Baltimore Ravens. Like, that's what those general managers do. So, I mean, he's trying to set that up here with the Jets in Florham Park, and it seems like he's well on his way.
We only got a couple of minutes left of the show. By the way, I am still – I'm legitimately nervous because, like, the Rule 76 thing – like, I didn't even know what that was. I screwed it up yesterday, so I practiced it last night.
You've never seen Wedding Crashers?
I am the exact opposite as a movie fan of everything that you would think, like the, you know, sports talk nerd. I am a total...
Okay, so you like The Notebook? You like movies like The Notebook,
chick
stuff
flick,
like that?
Period pieces. Eat, Pray,
Love, stuff
you give
like
me a,
that.
Yeah, you give me a choice between Sense and Sensibility or Wedding Crashers. It's not even close.
Oh, dear God.
I am Emma Thompson, Kate Winslet all day long.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, what an unbelievable. Love Sleepless in Seattle. I mean, that is right down. That is right in my alley.
Wow.
So, Rule 76. I'm going to nail it today, though. I'm going to get it right after we do three stars.
Okay.
Today's three stars of DCR.
And, of course, three stars of the day is brought to you by 7-Eleven. Guys, I'm going to start, as you know, Chris Canty. We have the voice of the Jets in hosting for Dave and Rick this week, right? You're the classy part of DCR, as he said. So, star number three is going to go to Bob Wischusen because, as the voice of the Jets, he gives us hard-hitting analysis. And I'm actually trying to pull up the cut right now. It's the...
If Team A can't block Team B, Team A's dead. There you go. That's why you listen.
That's hard-hitting Bob Wischusen.
That's why you listen.
And that's why we're here looking forward to more of it over the next couple of days.
That's right.
Number two
is going to go to Chris Canty, bringing back the stories of Vegas, the people watching in Vegas, the toddler losing his mind at 1 a.m. in, what was the hotel season?
The Cosmopolitan.
I mean, there's some places in the world that three-year-olds should never be. And I've got to feel like the Cosmopolitan in Vegas at 1 a.m. in the morning is probably one of those places, right?
Pretty sure that's not where toddlers belong. Pretty sure. Not sure if there's any place in Vegas that toddlers belong. Just throwing it
number
out.
Number one.
Throwing it out there. And number one, Bob, I'm going to go back to you because you told a great story about the marriage proposal going off the Wonder Years into the window. Tell us again how that worked out.
I mean, I'm married, I got five kids, but I got left out in the rain, like, you know, almost fell off the roof.
Listen, notes taken. Success is success any way you draw it.
Here we are.
That's three stars of the day brought to you by 7-Eleven. At 7-Eleven, get a $1 any size iced coffee with 7 rewards. 7-Eleven, take it to 11.
All right, it's been a lot of fun today. Can't wait to do it again tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow we'll have a new Rule 76, and, like, maybe we'll work in a Sense and Sensibility quote. But at least for now, it is Rule 76. No excuses. Play like a champion. It is DCR, Canty, Wischusen, and...
Everybody.
How'd I do?
That's pretty good.
Did I get it?
Pretty good.
I practiced all night. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow morning, DCR.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.